This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 20th of December, 1953. The title of this lecture is Reach, Withdraw. This tape is 62 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
We have here this special lecture, December the 20th, third lecture of the day, lecture and processing session on Reach and Withdraw today. We talked a little bit at class about reach and withdraw, and I think we ought to talk about it a little more. It appears in one of the PABs, Professional Auditor's Bulletins, as Formula H. The discovery of reach and withdraw itself marked a definite peak, because here was the activity in which the thetan was engaging. What does a thetan do? A thetan reaches and withdraws. What does the meshed universe do with relationship to the thetan? It reaches and withdraws, reaches for and withdraws from the thetan. So we have this as an operating basis. And when the thetan is reaching and withdrawing on the same wavelength as the meshed universe, he is, of course, trapped by the meshed universe to that degree that he insists that he is meeting resistances in his reaches and withdrawals. The whole process of trapping something would be to convince it that it was surrounded by barriers. Now, how do you make a barrier? You get the meshed universe. In the meshed universe, you make it this way. You get the meshed universe reaching and holding its reach out. See, in other words, it reaches to a certain level. Well, now you could say it was reaching to a certain level and withdrawing. It was reaching and trying to withdraw in such a, trying to reach and trying to withdraw in such a stability that you had a wall. Now, a thetan can come along and see this wall, and he can reach and withdraw on exactly the same wavelength, but he can, again, try to reach and try to withdraw at the same time, and he'll get a matched wavelength against that wall. And if he just holds it there and freezes it there, why, he would feel he was really stuck. Why? Because he's met a resistance. Now, the resistance to anything brings about the cycle of inversion. So a person inverts simply because he's been overreached. Something has reached him faster than he could withdraw and has turned him backwards, and he's now going on its determinism. So we get something reaching him and overreaching him, and now he's using something else's reaching. So there we have overreaching on the part of another determinism to the point which the individual becomes the other determinism. In other words, we overcome the ability to reach and withdraw on the part of the individual and compel him to reach and withdraw at the behest of another determinism. So the other determinism is what the preclear is using. When you find somebody that's really, really out of his mind or something of the sort, he is operating entirely on somebody else's or something else's determinism. Now, there are many, many mechanical means by which this occurs. There's the engram. The person has had something reach him so powerfully, while he was trying to resist it, that he was pressed right straight back down into apathy. And then in apathy, of course, pushed into a situation where he could only accept this inflow. So he has the inflow. Now, the meshed universe reaches so well, and then he operates, of course, on this inflow. And he uses it to reach and withdraw. So we find an individual using facsimiles and being dictated to by facsimiles because they've been overcome by energy so often that even their own energy can turn against them. That's not too hard to understand, particularly if you drew a... if you took your hand, for instance, and reached past a certain point, you could see how it would reach right on out the other side. And the individual then is running backwards. You get these direction shifts on the part of people. You wonder, why is left right and right's left? Well, the person is running on one of these inversions. He's been overreached. And he's running on the overreach. Well, a person who's agreed heavily with the meshed universe has had to been overreached first and several times, in order to bring about a condition where he would only go in the same direction that it goes. Now, I won't go into a bunch of theoretical stuff because this stuff I'm giving is strictly practical, but it opens up in parascientology an awful lot of doors. And one of these doors is, which way does time travel? Well, you find the Thetan who is going along in the missed universe time stream must be traveling there backwards for him. And that's just parascientology. He's traveling backwards. In other words, he's going from what is for him into a state of destruction. Well, the Thetan would never, under his own determinism, destroy himself. In the first place, he couldn't, but he is apparently degenerating as he hits the universe. So therefore, a Thetan going forward would have a tendency to become more and be more and so on. And you get a Thetan to run backwards any engram and run backwards any time span, and he gets regret and regrets regret and so on. He's trying to stop time. It's definitely true, and he gets stuck on the track as a reason why. He tries to stop particles. Well, as I say, it opens up the door to a tremendous amount of speculation. Just reach and withdraw. Reach and withdraw, he's overreached, and so after that he uses the motion which he's been granted, and after that he's stuck in the time stream, and you can say all sorts of things. It leads off into lots of speculation, and wonders whether or not the composition of energy is as it looks, and there's lots of things you can go into there, but we're not trying to go into that. We're just trying to go into the simple action. What's the Thetan do? He reaches and withdraws. He is reached for and withdrawn from. Well, that's in terms of any action, then, that's what he's doing. Now, how many ways can you phrase reach? Well, actually, the word reach has been used advisedly, because a Thetan reaches for more often than he reaches to. In other words, he's his own best space limiter, and so on. And actually, a person who is unable to reach adequately is unable to arrive. And for your Thetan that you're practicing on, why, he, of course, the one thing he probably can't do is arrive, because in this universe, to arrive is to die. That's the final arrival. So anybody who's having trouble with arriving is having trouble reaching. So he's trying to reach. Now, an individual's having trouble with perception is trying to withdraw. Now, I brought up the case, and I'll state it again, of the individual whose perceptions turn on and then suddenly turn off. You work and like mad, and you decide that the best thing in the world to do is to get this fellow's perceptions on. You work. Oh, you decide that's real good, and he decides that's real good, and you think you're very triumphant, and then you see him on the next session, his perceptions are off. And you say, well, a son of a gun, he just made up his mind, and he turned his perceptions off. No, he didn't. But that's what it looks like. And you're looking at the basic mechanical fact of occlusion. You're looking at the problem of hattiness. You're looking at the problem of ownership. When you're looking at the problem of turn-off perception. Now, he's been educated in the field of ownership. He said, educated, there are certain things he can't have. Ownership is a problem of havingness. If you own something, you can have it. If you don't own it, you can't have it. That's the way the police systems of the world operate. And therefore, if you don't own something, ordinarily you mustn't touch it. And if you own something, you can touch it. So pretty clear who's occluded is having ownership trouble, always having ownership trouble. He has to have it real nailed down, and deeds of title and all sorts of things to convince him that he owns something, and only then can he touch it. Well, when he's been overcome too often with other determinism, he of course believes that even the pictures he sees, because they are pictures of other things, he believes they aren't his, but they're pictures of things he can't touch, so he can't touch his pictures. So you turn on beautiful Visio facsimile, and he flinches. And he comes right straight back out of the perception of it. Why? Because he doesn't dare touch it. In order to perceive anything, a Thetan must be able to touch it. He must reach it. And he reaches out and reaches something and then brings it back in as a picture. Now, if he's depending on a photon flow and everything to come to him, then he's agreeing with the inflow of the meshed universe. And it's just reaching him all the time and so forth. Well, it can reach him and go straight through him. You can get anybody to reach out, just close his eyes and reach out toward an object, and he will come back with a picture of it. Ordinarily, this is true. And then he'll take a look at the picture of it and flinch, and it'll go black. That's because he can't have it. You mustn't touch it. It's one of the most aberrative. Single action on the track would be people trying to convince you that you mustn't touch things, but that is enforced by pain. Pain is the result of having touched something which was not supposed to be touched, and after a person has touched things and been hurt many times, then he recoils the moment he sees something he won't touch. So then he gets problems of ownership. There, too, is problems of protection. Protection is don't touch. Well, now, in phrasing reach, you can phrase it as touch. As in phrasing withdraw, you can phrase it as run away or leave alone or mustn't touch. And in phrase of reach, you have perceive. In withdraw, you have don't perceive. And in terms of occlusion, you have withdraw into what he at least owns, which is the old burned out residue. Nobody else wants that. He can have that so he can get back into the blackness. So he's seen something and flinched. The second he's seen something and flinched, he's, of course, back in the blackness again, so off go his perceptions. Actually, his perceptions are there all the time, only he isn't on the other side of the black curtain. So he's having reach and withdraw trouble. Now, there's something he mustn't perceive, which is something he mustn't touch. Now, let's just take an analysis of the case. Let's take him on an e-meter. Let's take him over the eight dynamics, and let's find out what dynamic he mustn't touch something on. In other words, what dynamic are you supposed to leave alone? Well, you'll get several flicks on a meter. And you just take these then and have him reach and withdraw from that class of things. And those things which he mustn't touch will eventually show up, and his perception will come on. Now, reach and withdraw in a desperate case will turn on perception. You have to sit down and run reach and withdraw until you turn on perception. You just do it. That's all. But it's formula. Now, another thing which is formula H, and it's very applicable. So what is the modus operandi of perception? The modus operandi of perception is sending out some energy in terms of reach and withdraw and taking some pictures of something with that energy and then examining it. And that is a safe way of doing it for anything. Another way to do it is throw a viewpoint out there and look at it. Well, he's doing this with his eyes. Now, a person who's having trouble with this, you say, now reach for the clock, now withdraw from it and take a look at what you've got. And he does, and he has a picture of another clock. See, he reads for it all right, but he gets the facsimile of another clock. He retailors it before he gets it back because it might bite. He mustn't duplicate if he's doing this, you see. He reaches for the clock and he gets another clock. Well, he can't duplicate the clock. A person who can duplicate very easily, of course, just reaches for the clock and gets a picture of the clock. That's all. Reaching and withdrawing has a great deal to do with perception. So there are things he mustn't touch, which means things he mustn't reach for and withdraw from. That comes under heading of reach and withdraw, and that's why perceptions are off if you want the most basic rule. Mustn't touch. Mustn't touch is mustn't have. Those things which are protected are those things which others mustn't touch. You can almost index Preakler simply by touching him on the shoulder. If he flinches and has to run it out after you've done that, well, you know that this boy's having an awful lot of trouble, and he's probably in the occluded case. Nothing to that, see? So, here we have, with great ease, a quote diagnosis, unquote, of the Thetan. How much can he reach and withdraw from? Now, oddly enough, one of the first things that a Thetan recoils from in terms of reach and withdraw is space, because there's nothing to reach. Now, did you ever stand up and fight nothing? We can get a Preakler with the idea of fighting nothing, and he gets kind of sick. The terrific satisfaction of a bull during a bullfight, when he finally gets his horns into that horse, it's wonderful. Up to that time, he's been able to butt nothing but capes. And boy, that bull will take anything to just butt good and solidly at that horse. Oh, it's anything. That's satisfactory. You can practically hear him purr as he gets those horns into that blanket and twist them around. At the same time, there is really why he can later on be befuddled further and transfixed by swords. Because he's gotten this terrific engram. All the time he's butting the horse, he's being knifed. He's being piked, really. He's being piked so thoroughly that after that he doesn't dare butt. And this, in essence, is what has happened to the Thetan. He's fought nothing and fought nothing and fought nothing, and then he finally did fight something. And by golly, he fought it with great satisfaction, and boy, did he get a kickback from it, but solidly, and he got enough kickback from it, so after that he doesn't even want to fight something. So now he won't fight something and he won't fight nothing. Well, the first perception problem was perception of space. You get unlimited space. He threw up some unlimited space and then tried to see something in it, you see. He put a mock-up up in it or put something in it and then somebody took it away and then he tried to see it again. He tried to fight whatever took it away and he couldn't see this. And so he was left fighting nothing. Now, this is insidious, horrible. Another thing is, space doesn't give you a bit of attention. All you can do is to space is give it attention. You get some pre-clear to get the idea of black space giving him attention. And you get a terrible problem in terms of reach and withdraw. That's why most of your recluded cases are space opera people. They've been out there in black space often enough and long enough trying to reach some destination or withdraw from some destination because the action of travel is reach and withdraw simultaneously. And, you withdraw from what is behind you and reach what is in front of you. And you get a point of apathy, as far as they're concerned, on ever reaching anything or ever really getting away from anything because they have no points with which to compare their travel. And they are apparently just motionless, but still trying to reach something, still trying to withdraw something. You tell such a person, now reach, withdraw. He gets blackness. He's stuck, in other words, on trying to reach and withdraw in black space. And you show him something, he has trouble with havingness, too. That's another part of space opera. And so anytime he sees anything, he'll flinch. If he sees a mock-up, why, maybe three or four mock-ups later, he'll all of a sudden go black again. So, as a consequence, when he loses anything, everything goes black. The idea of loss turns everything black. That's a not havingness. That's, again, he has failed. He put up something there, and he said nobody else should touch it, and by golly, they did. He can't even protect it. And so he must be back there in black space where it was also very, very interestingly upsetting. He just says this to himself. He flinches away from the object, and he doesn't want to see it again. Well, all right. We have in our categories with Thetans, many manifestations, and all these manifestations are reach and withdraw. Let's take that tone scale up there, and we find out that every emotion on it is a manifestation of reach and withdraw. How do we do this? Anger is must reach, can't reach. Insanity itself, the emotion, is must reach, but unable to reach. And you run that out of free clear, must reach, unable to reach. And he'll eventually turn on the emotion of being insane. It's just a certain portion of the tone scale up there rather than a condition into which one degenerates. He gets a reach and withdrawal lockup. All right, now we get the individual who is afraid. And the whole environment to him is saying, withdraw, withdraw, withdraw. And the tiniest little reach that he makes will make him afraid. See, he makes a little reach and he gets scared. Why? Because the environment tells him he has to withdraw. He can't make the environment withdraw, so he has to withdraw. Hence, we get this little process you can use on a cat. You make the cat cuff at your fingers. You coax him into cuffing at you and slapping at you. And finally, you withdraw every time, you see. And he gets the idea he can make the environment withdraw, which makes him very cocky indeed. He gets to be a very healthy cat. Oh, he gets to be a tough cat. That dangerousness, then, is whether or not you can make something withdraw when you tell it to. And control is whether or not you can make something withdraw or come to you. In other words, if you can reach it and withdraw it from its former position or move it sideways. So there's hold and let go along with that. And holding something still or letting go of it. Now, a lot of your pre-clears have a trouble with hold and let go. They'll get out of their heads and they get hold of something and can't let go. And this really upsets them. They go back in their heads and after that they've just sunk. So reach and withdraw naturally bring about the conditions of hold and let go. If you reach something and grasp it, you have to let go of it before you can withdraw from it. They've got this. But it gets tangled and confused in them. And our pre-clear has done this, is simply drilled on the basis of reaching something, grabbing hold of it, and then letting go of it and withdrawing from it. You put those two steps in there. You ask some of these people right here, by the way, whether or not they've had this happen to them, and two or three of them will tell you they have. And the thing that gets it over that is just take their messed hands and just make them reach things, hold on to them, let go of them, and withdraw from them mechanically over and over and over and over and over.
And they all of a sudden say, you know, I don't have to be stuck to this stuff. They're usually in some kind of an assumption body, or an OFAC 1 body that holds on or sticks to something. Well, they've just been in too much combat with the messed universe, and they majored up its wavelength too well, and they're on a not have, and they're generally an occluded case and so forth. But here is reach and withdraw manifested all the way up and down the tone scale. All the laws of motion have to do with reach and withdraw, and all the laws of terminals have to do with hold and let go and reach and withdraw. When we get into this subject, then we're pretty well into the subject of life behavior. And it's the most important one. Now, it isn't the most important because I said it so. Not because I just said so. That's not the reason. It's the most important one. Could be, you understand. I'm totally capable of doing that. But it doesn't happen to be the most important reason why. It's because it works. All right. Now, when we look over our preclear, we'll find out that those things at which he cannot look, now let's integrate this into look, feel, effort, think. Those things which he has to think about but can't look at are those things which he doesn't dare reach. He can't touch them, in other words. And those things which he obsessively remembers are those things which can touch him any time. He realizes he's powerless to forbid things from touching him, certain things. So therefore he gets touchy. Fits right into the language, by the way. He gets touchy to the point where you tap him on the shoulder unexpectedly and he jumps about 4 feet. He just doesn't like that, not at all. He wouldn't even like a friendly pat. It upsets him a little bit, a tiny friendly touch. Because things can touch him any time. Well, of course, the darn fool's got a body. Of course things can touch him at any time, but that's beside the point. He thinks he's the body, so therefore, if anything can touch the body, they can touch him, and he just gets more and more convinced. We get the highest echelon of all of this. The fellow is as convinced about being able to reach and withdraw as he is convinced about being able to reach and withdraw. That's about the end of it. So you just exercise him long enough to be convinced he can reach for these things with impunity, as himself, not as a body. That's nonsense to reach for him as a body. A body, of course, is highly destructible and is almost total inflowed. Body doesn't do any reaching and withdrawing. All it does is withdraw. Now let's get somebody being pounded and hammered and booted around and booted and hammered and pounded around and bing-banged and thud-thudded. And do you know he eventually gets a craving to have something? In other words, his own reachingness has been turned into withdrawingness to such a degree that he has to have. In other words, the pounding has given him a desire to own. He's been overcome often enough so that the desire on the part of the thing overcoming him was eventually translated into the energy units which he has still about him. So he turns around, you see, and goes the opposite direction, and when he tries to reach, he'll pull in. A fellow who has to have things. You'll run into that because you get a preclear to give up an aberration. Boy, he doesn't give up an aberration worth a nickel. Well, that's something he has to have. Well, that's because he's been overcome too often by things reaching to him. They can touch him. They can overcome him. They can reach him at any time. He's convinced of all this. Well, this is any of your cases from 4 down to 8. This is any of them, 4 to 7. And the problem there is just a problem of having been overcome. What is self-determinism? Self-determinism is whether or not you're reaching and withdrawing or whether or not something else is reaching and withdrawing, and that's about the end of it. That necessitates space before any of this can take place. Okay, well, I just want to give that to you real solidly because a lot of you are having trouble with having a little bit of trouble getting a session really rolling and getting somebody really in the groove so they're easy to process. Well, you use some reach and withdraw and you'll find out they're not so hard to process because they know something can happen because this technique does produce action. And this is a formula. This is formula H. And whether sentimentally or otherwise, I mean whether the word is too sentimental, and nevertheless, I call it formula H just so it stands for hope. And because it'll give the preclear some. So you just remember that's why it was named that way, and it was named that way so that you might remember that if your preclear appears to be very despairing about what's happened to him, you reach and withdraw for a while. Now, I've run this on many cases on specific things and achieved very interesting results. One fellow reached and withdrew for basic for about 10 hours and turned on all the perceptics on the line. Another fellow, he actually found it. It actually is there. Another fellow did some other things. on reach and withdraw, and recovered most of the aborted material on the case in a very short session. But the use of this, of course, is to some degree, unless you yourself address it straight out to the mesh universe and direct it in that fashion, it has a tendency to be a subjective technique. It is to say, you can have the fellow reaching and withdrawing in terms of his own universe toward his own facsimiles and toward his ideas long enough, and it becomes a limited technique. It practically spins him, so you can't carry this on forever without making him reach and withdraw in this universe. Well, you can do that. You can make him do that forever. You can have him reach and withdraw from these walls and through these walls and so on. Well, in essence, that's the whole of technique of step level 7 of SOPHC, is just reach and withdraw. Now, as I've said earlier, it's the whole of all the other techniques. Okay, now let's take a long breath here, and I'm going to run some processes here on you as a group and just demonstrate this. This is one technique that just by telling you about it isn't going to hurt it in its processing, because the fellow that can beat this one isn't alive. Now, when I say reach, I actually mean reach. Get as close to it as you can. If you don't get to it, at least get toward it and spot where it is. See that? I mean, let's not shorten up on it. Let's try to get to it. And when it reaches for you, if there's effort there, okay. If there's just lookingness there, okay. This doesn't matter what is there. You run whatever seems to be there in terms of reach, withdraw. Now, we're going to do this fairly rapidly. And if you get caught on the, you just started to reach, and we've already gone through a reach and withdraw cycle, why, you just skip that reach cycle and grab the next one I give you, because you actually can't mess up a bank with this one. Anybody who's banking to be messed up with this one is already so messed up, there's no hope for him, so let's go. All right. Now, let's reach for present time. Now reach for present time behind you. Now reach for present time below you. Now reach for present time to the right of you. Now reach to the left of you. Okay, now withdraw from present time behind you. In front of you. Above you. Below you. And otherwise. Now let's get present time reaching for you from in front of you. Now let's get present time reaching for you from behind you. Reaching for you from above you. Reaching for you from the right side. Reaching for you from the left side. And withdrawing from in front of you. Withdrawing from behind you. Withdrawing from above you, withdrawing from the right of you, withdrawing from the left of you. Now get it in a sphere, withdrawing. And get it withdrawing some more. And get it withdrawing some more. And now as it withdraws, get you reaching for it as it withdraws. Reach for it around as it withdraws. Reach for it behind you as it withdraws. Get its feeling trying to withdraw at least while you reach for it. All right, now as it continues to withdraw, you withdraw from it. You withdraw from it even harder. Now you withdraw from it even more. Now reach for it. Now have it suddenly reach for you. Now withdraw from it and have it withdraw from you. Now have it reach for you and you reach for it. Okay, now put what you've been doing out in front of you as a sort of a hit or miss mock-up and duplicate it. 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 And throw it away. Okay. Now, those of you who can, be 3 feet back of your head and continue this exercise there. or 25 feet or 25 miles. Be back there. Outside. If you snap in, that's not very important.
This lecture is continued on side 2 of this cassette.